Well, I know in your program it says that Dasha Jackson is the mistress of ceremony, but I'm not Dasha Jackson. Attorney Jackson was stuck in the storm back in Atlanta, so you remember her? Yeah, yes, exactly. So I am Rhonda White. I'm the eldest of Curtis and Ethelgene Jackson. And I and my sister, Lori, is back there. Wave your hand, Lori, so everyone knows who you are. And Curtis Jackson's grandchildren are here. If you're a grandchild, raise your hand. No, a grandchild. Now, if you're a great-grandchild of Curtis Jackson, raise your hand. Yeah, exactly. Listen, the music that you were listening to is the music that my father would play all the time on the sax. So you see that picture of him with him playing the sax. The music you were listening to is the kind of music that he would play often. Growing up in our house home was always open to people from different cultures, nationalities, ethnicities, and socioeconomic backgrounds. This taught me to celebrate and embrace diversity. It wasn't until I became an adult that I realized the extent of the racism my father faced as a child. He never spoke about the abuse he endured from police, store owners, or even educators right here at UNC Chapel Hill. As a result, I did not fully encounter racism or understand that I had encountered it myself until I went to graduate school. When I finally faced it, my father, my hero, stepped in. He helped me navigate a system determined to demoralize students of color. What they didn't realize was that I wasn't a first-generation graduate. I came from a highly educated, intelligent parents. My father, though often subjected to the oppressive racism, refused to let those same evils consume his daughters. In the book, If You Were Not Black, you realize that while everyone encounters some form of prejudice, Dad provides a historical and deeply significant perspective on the evolution of racism, one that can only be fully understood through the experience of being Black in America. It is therefore a profound honor for me to serve as your mistress of ceremony, paying tribute to not only my father's experiences, but also to the stories of others across all segments of our society. You will now have a video to watch, briefly. And right after the video, you will be heard by Brenda, who, let me just say before we start the video, we couldn't have pulled this off had it not been for Brenda. Let's totally give her a round of applause. This is from the book all the way to this first signing, and there will be many more, as well as a movie coming out. Yeah. So let's listen to this, watch this video first.
Things that happen to you, and you know they happen to you because you're Black.
It seeks to bridge the gap of the racial divide in America.
The race issue has permeated every facet of our lives.
The majority of white America does not understand.
Thank you. I was born in the small town of Wake Forest, Georgia in 1941. The same year Emmett Till was born, I was only 6 months older than he. My father was born in 1919 and grew up in the Jim Crow days. As head of the household, he was hardworking for the Atlantic Coastline Railroad. My mom, Eunice, was born a few years later in 1921. As a young boy, I recall hearing a well-known white politician make a statement on the radio that caught my attention when he said, "Now would you want your pretty little girls with their pretty little bows in their hair to sit up in a classroom behind a big black burly nigger?" That question was so alarming that it remained in my mind until my adult life. The question I asked my mom, why did she have to ride in the back seat of a car when a woman came to pick her up for work? Why couldn't we go into the five and dime stores and hotels and restaurants? Why could I put my hands in my pocket when I went in the stores? Why do we have to step off the sidewalk into the ditch when a number of white persons were walking down the same sidewalk? These questions led me to pull out a pen and start writing. Before long, I had several journals and incidents of racial discrimination from my observations. Over a period of years, I saw the real currents of the ills brought on black society by white society. For black America, the book could reaffirm the need to forgive and to divest oneself of bitterness in order to move forward. But for white America, I hope it will provide a moment of reflection to decide whether to be active in eliminating the black oppression and discrimination or to remain passive.
We, this people, on a small and lonely planet, traveling through casual space to a destination where all signs tell us it is possible and imperative that we learn a brave and startling truth. And when we come to it, to the day of peacemaking, when we release our fingers from fists of hostility and allow the pure air to cool our palms, when we let the rifles fall from our shoulders and children dress their dolls in flags of truce, and when landmines of death have been removed and the age can walk into the evenings of peace, when religious ritual is not perfumed by the incense of burning flesh, and childhood dreams are not kicked awake by nightmares of abuse. When we come to it, we this people, on this wayward floating body, created on the earth, on this earth, have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every man and every woman can live freely without piety, without crippling fear. When we come to it, we must confess that we are the possible, we are the miraculous, the true wonder of the world. That is when and only we come to it. It is my privilege, it has been my privilege and pleasure to work alongside with this brilliant, wonderful man who picked up his dream after 80 years. And I watched it come to fruition. And I'm glad to be a part of this beautiful celebration.
And I just want to say that some of your stories are in the book, and he's going to talk in just a second. I'll take his spot. But my sister is here, Sarah Cott, and she has a story in the book. Some of you are here, too, with your stories in the book. His granddaughter is in here. I think Mira, where are you? Mira, there you are. And someone else that walked in, Glenda. Where are you, Glenda? She's, there you are. Those stories in the book. And now, the one that you've been waiting for, the brilliant, miraculous, over-the-top man in the world, the author of If You Were Not Black, Curtis Jackson.
You have no idea what this means to me. Absolutely no idea. And since I am older than anyone here, there are a lot of things I can say that you don't even know about.
Let's hear it.
Tell me some things that happened to you, and you know they happened to you because you're black.
It seeks to bring.
You don't want to hear that again.
Sure that I agitated my parents a lot as I was coming along, because I grew up in segregation. The segregation didn't make sense to me. And so I would always ask, well, why? You know, why would we go through these kinds of things? Why can't we have that? Why can't we go there? And nobody was able to answer those questions. But what happened as a result of coming along, during the time I came along, was that I learned to doff hats, you know, the black-white environment, and I learned to shuffle things. Because what I had been taught in the system, you know, that Columbus discovered America. I wonder what the American Indians were doing when Columbus discovered America. But it made no sense as I went along that all of the things that I had encountered was to make me think, not only was I inferior, but I was genetically altered, you know. I couldn't do anything about it because genetically I was inferior. And as I went through the different things, I realized when I was between the ages of 17 to 20, I was a person, if certain things had happened at that time, I was ready to fight. I was ready to do the battle, you know? And I could have been really assassinated early in my life. And I remember something my mom told me one time. I said, well, because the way Waycross was divided up, in the center of the town, it was basically a white power structure. And then you had blacks on different sides. And I wanted to go across to the other side. And I remember saying to my mom, I said, well, I can go down to Albany Avenue and walk across the railroad. She said, you can't do that. I said, why can't I do that? She said, because you could come up and miss it. Now, mind you now, that was the same year that Emmett Till was killed, but even though I knew about those kinds of things, I didn't know that really I could have been. And you know what? Nothing would have been done about it. I used to wonder when they were talking about taking black people to court. It was a joke to me. I said, you know, it's a white jury. It's a black person. So what are we going to do different from the things that are done on the street? I saw some things. I saw some things that really made me sad and angry at the same time. I saw people battered with, policemen used to carry these long rods on the side. I've seen people's heads bashed in with those rods. I've seen people dragged down Oak Street by their belt while they were bleeding. So you can imagine what I wanted to do as a 15-year-old to observe that. But I had also learned that nothing was going to be done. And so that kind of kept me off the road to really get to the place where I would really be hurt. But because I play, I'm surprised at that picture there, okay? I used to play in a band. Lewis Hamblin and Hamptons. And because I went all these different places, I saw a lot of different things in these places. And see, I don't think anybody in here could even talk about a lynching, you know, because that's, you know, you just read that in history. But to go into a place where somebody has been lynched and the body has been there for days, in that place. Hmm. You smell that aroma in the air. That's another kind of experience. So what happens is more than anger. You just say, how am I going to get back? And I just think of a, I'll cite the whole thing of that. But you can draw your own conclusion. I was coming back from a band trip we had played, and it was foggy. It was in the northern part of Florida, near the Georgia line. And it was really foggy, and because of the fog was so thick, you could see this flashing light way down the highway. And so the man who was in charge of that particular band I was in slowed up, because he knew he was treading on dangerous ground to drive fast. And so he slowed up, and as he slowed up, they pulled around that road, and the man got out, the cop, and he had a deputy with him who had one, a long flashlight that must have had about four or six of those things in it. And he said, boy, I'm already just inside. He asked the man who was driving, boy, didn't you hear that siren and see that light? And so the man played the black game. Yassa. And I'm really just really angry because there are two of them and eight of us. So what's in my mind is, it's two of y'all, but it's eight of us, and there's a big ditch right on the other side. That's what was in my mind. But the man who was in charge of that band knew what we were up against, and so he played that game. And I guess that's the thing that caused me to seethe all through my life, playing those kinds of games, knowing that I shouldn't have to play those kinds of games. And then, of all of the things that have happened to me, I'm going to stop and tell you about three of them, okay? Because I've had scores of black-white encounters. Scores of, matter of fact, I can write six more books on those things. But But check it out, three of them, because those three affected my family. I mean, I just went along with the thing because you could do things to me, but things that affected my family adversely, those were the things that stayed in me. And I need to pray over those things more because they still are in my mind. And I said, I'm so glad to see Victor here because we're in the School of Public Health at the same time. That's the reason when I saw Trump doing some things about government and I saw he moved all those people out of public health. I had a course in administrative epidemiology, and I knew what outcome that was going to be with all those people being removed. But I'm not even going to go there. The thing that had happened, I had helped to write a grant for a country in Africa, the Cameroon. And I'd have to write the grant. It was a successful grant. It was funded. They sent three doctors to spend time with me over time in Chapel Hill. I guess to see whether all the stuff I had written, I knew what I was doing. So they sent these three people, and they didn't come at the same time. I don't know if you remember, there was one Dr. Njiku, Dr. Mbaba, and Dr. Mbaka. Those were the three persons who came. And as a result of going out in the, in the course with me, as I went through the different places, they came to the conclusion that I could run that program. Even though the program was going to be instituted in the Anglophone and the Francophone section of the Cameroon. And they signed off on it. And so we went through a lot of things. I took my family to get all of the shots and all of that stuff. Because I had gone to the point of knowing what I was really doing. 2 weeks before we were to depart, it comes up that there's a fellow from the World Health Organization, who's a white male, who's the last person to sign off on it. And he didn't sign off on it, and he said that the papers say that the chief of party, and I would have been chief of party, the chief of party has to be at level 4 French. Now, level 4 French was not just being bilingual, because I was already past level 2 French, just stuff I knew. And because of that, what that man did caused me not to be able to take my family into an environment where they could then experience some things that I knew they would never experience in America. See, because when I wrote the book, If You Were Not Black, I should have put on the If You Were Not Black America. Because what I finally just read up on finally was that woven into the fabric of the nation were some things that really didn't make sense, but it was woven in there to keep black people always down. I mean, that's the design. The design is to keep black people down always. And I remember I was in my 20s when I read a book by W. E. Du Bois. And he had written out all these things that I knew this was right. This man had some experience, and I wish I had the experience of reading his book before that. Because the design is right now, and that's the reason I wanted not just young people, but people in general, black boys and girls too. I don't have a copy of the book here. But I want them to see this stuff is going on right now. And you can help to alter it by doing this. And so, if you should read through the book, if you were not black, I made up in my mind to try to find some people that people would know locally. You know, I could have gotten people from New York or California, but I wanted people to identify with some people that they already know. And what I'm telling you, these people can tell you because they're experiencing the same things right now. And it's the absolute truth. That's the reason you have to be aware of what's going on around you. You just can't take for granted people are always going to do, oh, I don't know, maybe some people didn't see that, but there's a page in the book that talks about don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do.
Amen.
That's the truth. Because there's some people that you will think are on your side. And they will lie to you too.
That's
true. So you have to be aware of all of the things that are going on, and you have to keep yourself geared up for it. You got to, like I said, roll with the punches. You got to learn to roll with the punches. You got to learn to doff the hats. Because that one thing that happened, don't listen to what they say, watch what they do. That's what you have to do. That was one thing that affected my family. And so I was really upset about that one. Another thing that happened was I worked in an environment where, a fella had gotten a promotion in an environment, and I didn't know he had done this. People who were in public health would know this. We just talk about solid money, AHEC money. I was funny on AHEC money, so I could stay on that till Jesus comes, because it was solid money. But what this man had done, he had gone into the office where the records were kept, and he took my name off the solid funds and put his friend's name on the solid funds. And so it just went by for years, and I didn't know that. I only came to that conclusion when my wife got very ill. And I said, well, I'm going to retire and take care of my wife. And when I went to retire, they told me I didn't have enough hours in. I knew something was wrong with that. I mean, I had more than 20 years, so what is this about? And that's when some ladies told me, Mr. Jackson, this is what happened. They told me who the fellow was who changed my name on the money. What was I going to do? I couldn't fight him. Who was going to believe what I was saying? I mean, even though it's documented what he did, they were not going to change that. Plus, he had gone. I didn't have money to fight. So that's number two thing that happened to me that I was really upset about because it affected my family. And even though I told you scores of things that happened, I'm just going to tell you about one more. When I was in the School of Public Health, and I had gone through, got a degree, I did some stuff in Miami, and I was really boosted up because of what I had done in the Dade County Department of Public Health. The place has 17 municipalities, and I had gone to all those municipalities while I was doing my field work. But the thing that happened was when I hate to even think about it. When I was in the School of Public Health and I had enrolled in the doctoral program, mind you, I got 3 kids and a wife. So I say, okay, I don't have any more funds coming in, so I'm gonna have to work a year, you know, to get enough money to take care of family. And so they were okay with that. Dr. Greenberg wasn't alive then, but he had told me, Curtis, I want you to get your doctorate. And so I enrolled in a doctoral program. I started. And because I took that year, I didn't think that was a big deal. You know, I had helped other people in the program do their dissertations. I had proofed dissertations. I had done all that stuff. When I went back to go into the program, oh, there was a man who, I think he might still be there. There was a man there who told me that I couldn't come back into the program. And in order to even be competitive, to even be thought about, I had to take 9 hours in the undergraduate program. I mean, things that I had taught myself to students, I got to go 9 hours, so I knew what that deal was about. So I was seated again. But I knew I could not combat that man because of who he was, the position he held, and the position I held. But as I reflect upon that, I really have to pray over that and forgive those people in those three situations. Even though, like I say, I encountered a lot of stuff out here, but I try to let younger people understand these are some of the battles that you fight. And, you know, don't do anything silly like I was gonna do with those two guys when we were in that car. Don't do things silly. Just know this is how the system works. But I went on through, and because I stayed lined up with what I was doing, and I had good friends around me, like it was Ben here, my friends over here, my friend here who wrote that beautiful book. I still had supportive people around me, and because I had supportive people around me, I was able to do things that helped the environment I was in, the people I was in, and the people supported me. Because I wouldn't have been able to do a lot of things had I not gotten support from people like Victor. And so I want you to know that as you read the book, If You Were Not Black, I learned something by going to other countries. A lot of people thought that, well, a lot of black people in America think that, well, this is the black people thing. But what it is that it's ingrained in the system. And you gotta learn how to get out of what's ingrained in the system. I was I was in one country, I'm not gonna call all of the countries, but I was in a place. And unlike every place I had gone in America, they had faith in this church I had gone to. And there was Mary holding Jesus. And both of them were black, Mary and Jesus were black. Jesus. And then I was in a place in India. I think it was Bhubaneswar. It was in India, okay. I was in India, and I stood beside a structure, a huge structure. And as I looked up, I looked at how the structure had been manipulated. They had broken the lips off, the nose, and the ears. I knew what that was about. Someplace in the history of that country, black people had owned all that stuff and had done all these things. But if I never would have read about that in the and the books that I had been reading in America, that never would have been shown to me. And that's what's happened now. And that's the reason you people who are here have to really help young people who are going through these things, go through them and prepare themselves adequately. Because there are some people who really want to maintain a status quo. And if you don't believe it, you read the stuff that's written. I mean, I read some things in our historical high order schools, you know, things that's at Harvard, Yale, Princeton. You can't believe all of that stuff. You got to realize there are some people who have been places and who have written some things over and beyond the stuff that you read there. So what I want you to do, because you're here to support me, I want you to touch the lives of other people so that when they get to my age, they will have a different view. And not only will they have a different view, they have some money in their pockets. Because it's possible to do. It's possible to do. So as I come and I look at you who have gathered here to help me with the signing of this book, I want you to know how much I appreciate you. I don't take this for granted. I want you to know how much I appreciate you. And in addition to that, I want you to know that at any time I can be of help, let me know. And I thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Any questions? Any questions you have about anything?
I'm asking.
Okay.
You mentioned in your talk about how you still have to pray over those three things that happened to your family. So my question is, how have you kept from being bitter? Because I think that's a real skill, because you're always looking forward. Even at, I won't say, you know, at your seasoned age, you're always still looking forward and you're always contributing. So it would be helpful to us younger people. You know, how do you keep from being bitter about the things that happened to you and the things that continue to happen?
Okay, I'm going to tell you something right now. And this was not in my mind to talk about this. Talk about my spiritual experience. I had all that crazy stuff that happened to me, okay? But one day I had a spiritual experience that was supernatural. I didn't talk about it a lot because my colleagues would say, let's just put him in a straitjacket and take him on. You know, nobody would believe what happened to me. But I had a supernatural experience. I'm gonna take one 5-second review of this. Our intellects are far with the stuff that we have learned in these systems. And if you look at the bell curve, most of that stuff comes within 2 deviations of the mean plus or minus. You know, there's some other things beyond that. And the thing that happened with me on that day, when I had that supernatural experience, this is not going to make sense, but I'm going to say it anyhow. All the stuff I had learned in all those years of going to school and all of that stuff was overshadowed by some learning that came to me in that moment when I went into this state of, it was another zone. And if somebody, if you had told me that, I'd say, y'all couldn't get it. Because it didn't make sense. It's out of the realm of the senses. And when I say that, I want you to understand that there really, really is a God.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Mm-hmm. Is that, believe it or not, there really is. And he created time, mm-hmm. space and matter. So there's going to come a time when time and space and matter won't matter because there's another zone. But that's, to answer your question, I prayed and got beyond that. Even though that sort of stuff will bounce back to me, I realized that that experience I had that day where I left the realm of believing and I was transferred to knowing. There's a difference between believing and knowing, believe it or not. And I knew some things that, you know, I've been taught all my life. But you need to get yourself into that zone so you can pray beyond that. Okay. All the questions, right? Okay. I'm glad y'all stayed and listened to me that long.
How old were you when you had that experience?
That's a natural experience.
How old were you when you had that?
I was in my middle to early 40s when that happened. It was a Wednesday evening. And I was just about to leave church, really, because we had that Wednesday evening service. And all of a sudden, I fell. About just out, like, you know, okay, got the punch. And these guys picked me up and walked me up to the front of the church. And I'm saying to myself, what just happened to me? You know, what is this all about? You know, because that had never happened to me before. And then even after I had it, I realized nobody's going to believe it. But some people were there. Laura was there when it happened. Dasha was there. And Laura said, what happened, Dad? What happened? And I tried to explain to her. But there's some places to go that are beyond what you've experienced already, okay? Mm-hmm.
So how old were you then?
I was either in my early to middle 40s when that happened. What's the Heritage Foundation? See, a lot of people just believe what the Heritage Foundation is funding. But there's some stuff that we have been taught to believe, and it ain't necessarily so. There are some guys who wrote a book entitled, what's the curve I just told you about?
Bell curve.
Yeah, they wrote this book. And when I read it, I said, who funds this garbage? And I looked at the Heritage Foundation. So really, you got to be on your P's and Q's, and you really got to go beyond where you have gone thus far. You can go beyond where you've gone. I just realized when that fella kicked me out of the doctoral program, I was really upset because that was a part of my whole system of where I was going to go with my family. But I realized there's some other thing. That was one of the three priorities I had in my life. So I don't want you to get bogged down in stuff that has hit you and just made you so sad, washed out. Because I know you go through some stuff. You know, I'm not the only person who's gone through stuff. But I want you to know that because you have come here to be supportive of me this evening, I thank you very much. Yes?
Mr. Jackson, what about your grandfather? You talked about your father. Can you share a little bit about your grandparents? And, like, what were they also from Georgia, or what was some of their history?
Let me tell you what my grandfather told me on my dad's side. On my dad's side, his mother's father, they were not in this thing of just trying to make a penny every day. Because when the Titanic sank, that grandmother was in college. man. She was just, you know, sharing with me, but I didn't, you know, I was too young to be able to understand the impact of that. But my grandfather on that side told me, what's the thing where at the end of slavery, the 4 acres of the new stuff.
Reconstruction?
Yeah, but what was that way? You know, people give us some profit and all, and they work with some people at the end of the year.
Sharecropping.
Sharecropping. My dad told me, say, sharecropping is a joke. He said, where I was and where a lot of my friends were, if the man told you at the end of the year, we just broke even, he said, what you gonna do? The man tells you, you broke even. Are you gonna take him to court? Are you kidding? But they managed to juggle and balance stuff in spite of what they were going through. Yeah, but that was it.
So given the situation as it is, and has it is gotten worse again, right? Racism?
Yeah.
What would you say would be a good positive way to try to heal that in our society that we live in?
Actually, I'm going to be honest about my spiritual life really lifted me above all that, because and you need to get involved in stuff that you can do. You know, you got to be competitive. You can't just say, well, that's what they're going to do. No, you got to get up there and speak up and get involved with what's happening around you. You know, like you, but this is scary. Like you, I admire the place that's scary too. I look at the things she does in her community, and I don't know if I'd have the energy, to really get. But you really do have to do that. You have to put yourself into the issues at hand.
Curtis.
Talk to
him. How's it going, Eddie Curtis?
I'm doing well.
I've heard all of my time being with younger business. Particularly that one, the doctor. What would you tell that man if he were standing here? What would you tell him?
That's a good question.
Let me tell you what Brenda told me.
Brenda
told
me
to go.
Yeah, what would you tell him?
They told me to say, go up to him, because more than one person told him, they go up to him and hold his hand and say, tell him, I forgive you.
Yeah.
Is that what you would do?
Yeah. That's what Brenda said. What would you do?
Okay.
I'm going to interrupt just a second because some people have to leave. That's okay.
Oh, okay. All right.
While he's doing that, after we'll ask, I think we have time for one more question. And then we'll let you all gravitate over here to the table, help yourself. Also on the table here, snacks you can take with you. We were hoping that you might get, thinking you might get hungry and you want to eat right there. But I want to say before everybody splits up is that if you're allergic to any of that, please let us know because we don't want you to get sick because some people are allergic to chocolate. Go ahead. Go back to the author.
Set to poetry. That's it. That's such a good. And I really do thank you here. So we got.
I also would like to say there's some person here we want to make a person I want to give great recognition to, and that is Victor. Victor almost bought every book we had. He brought 1,000 books, okay? And gave it to his friend. So thank you, Victor. You kept us in business well.
If everybody bought as many books as Victor bought, I'd have to be calling the publisher today. When they advertise it on TV, he bought 10 or 11 on TV. And then he's been in my house many times, but after that, even more. And I appreciate you, Victor. He's been my friend. But he's been my supporter, too, in addition to being my friend.
That's awesome. So all right. Thank you.
So Curtis is losing some of his credibility now. But I want to be sure everybody here knows that there's an interview that he did and recorded with me. It's available on YouTube. I have a link that you can find it from on this file. So. And I don't know why you didn't advertise your interview.
Big, I tell you, because I knew you were going to put it out there. People were going to know about it to read through what Big Prince up. I look out here and I see all the things that you put out here and the things that you have put in online for me and for my wife. And I appreciate it. I want to tell you, before all these people, I really appreciate the support that you gave us days when we were just about to go out. Really. But you stay caught up with Victor's printing, because he talks, anything I'm going to do, Victor has captured it on TV, on the internet. And like I say, if the things that come to your mind, call me or come by. I'm home 99% of the time. That's my neighbor right there. They bring me food. And they know that I'm home a lot. So just come by and visit me sometime. Speak to my brother.
I will love to do that.
Can we give him another hand here? All right, help yourself to the food here. And also, we made a convention for you. If you'd like to buy a book for a friend for Christmas, you don't have to go in the malls, in the busy mall there. And we have a book over here. I'm in a box.
Can you
mail that for me? Can you?
Thank you. Thank you.
That's my niece.
Thank y'all for coming.
Very good. Enjoy it.
The least little thing runs my ship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing over there.
Hey.
I'm good. It's over there.
I can see. Look like some chicken.
Yeah,
some
chicken. Did you say where all the cookies?
The batter with the flour on it.
You told me where our ice cream, but it didn't say.
No, it's, I don't know what it is. What they do.
So I went up and I read it. So I have a question for you.
So I don't know if you...
I have to say, coming from Jersey and the New York area, and then I went to Boston.
Well, I can get into signing in church. Remember the same church.
No, I'm not kidding. So here's my perspective. When I was working at the Brigham Group, and then I started there in 81.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?